Everyone.
Hello.
Hi.
Welcome once more to Reckless Attack, a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. I am, as ever, GM Nathan, surrounded by some of the finest in actual play role-playing. That's right. Let's all go around, as we always do, introducing our various players before we jump into the juicy, juicy homecoming action, starting with the person across from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm David. And I play Kaskrin Brightmane, the Dwarven Sorcerer, who's newly level 10.
Yeah!
It's pretty neat. We have recently gone out of the Deadlands, also pretty neat. And Kaskrin's just like, man, the Shepherd, how'd they find us?
Yep, yeah, they're around, yep.
Always watching, just like, all right.
Got an eye on things,
cool.
I guess.
Cool. And to my left.
Hi, everyone. My name is Steve, and I am playing... C'est la vie as Ter Erlin.
Is this because your printer ran out of toner?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it is. Yeah.
Steve was really excited to show us how truly bad his character is.
Yes, because I like to have a physical copy just in case I can't get it on the device. And well, now I'm playing C'est la vie. But I am, as always, playing
Settle of Asterlin,
the dragonborn monk. Who is ready for a nice nap in a walled city? I think that's a...
Walls are pretty great.
Yeah, walls. Underrated, actually, turns out.
Yeah. And across from me.
Hi, everyone. I'm Sophie, and I play Valeska Carter, the human asterisk cleric asterisk of the Arcana Domain. And Val has a new toy, and she's been figuring out what it does.
Val's got a Groma, baby.
Groma!
Which is a sentence that was definitely really high on the betting odds that we would say during the course of this campaign.
Presented by FanDuel.
Val's got a Groma.
Yeah, it only paid out 1.25 to 1.
Yeah, it was pretty... It was really surprising. But, you know, hey, someone I'm sure made at least a little scratch back.
And to my left.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jonathan, and I play Checkers, the Grung Druid, and his trusty frog pal, Mango, and potentially Junior, if I have anything to say about it. And Checkers is really thinking about all the firsts that the Golden Tree Guild has had over the past week.
Hmm.
We were the first to go into the Deadlands and survive, the first to visit Narhawser, the first to leave Narhawser,
crucially,
and also survive.
Mm-hmm. First mortals to see Sunfall.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's true.
Up close.
A lot of firsts for us that I'm sure we'll be excited to talk to people about when we get to Agmar.
And that will be alone enough XP to just kind of turn in as like bonus XP to get to 11.
Yeah, correct.
Yep. Well, isn't it nice to have wishful thinking? Our level 10 adventurers are in the air on top of, or I guess otherwise in... Maybe next to, I don't want to prescribe exactly how you guys are spending the next 2 to 4 days, but you are somewhat attached to the Sky Stalker, heading back to the Red City of Agmar, deciding to slow play your RSVP to a certain kind of lingering invitation. You guys have spent a few days traveling. You have successfully, excitingly, taking long rests.
Without exhaustion this time.
Yes, and no more exhaustion. You have finally cleared that from your system. You guys are finally feeling a little bit more clear-headed and able to more or less fully function. Obviously, you know, we all deal with stress in different ways, but at least you do not have mechanical exhaustion. But finally, you guys find yourselves in Agmar airspace.
Hey.
It's been... a relatively peaceful few days, at least as far as traveling in Rixia goes. You have not seen any signs of First One activities, either the big swarm that you saw or whatever was circling around you dropping said rock in the prior episode.
Which leads me to an interesting question, Nathan. Mm-hmm. On our flight back, did we notice any change in, let's say, flora or fauna? Like, we when we were leaving, we when we first left Agmar, you know, we saw all the kind of weird stuff while we were traveling on foot. There was stuff we saw from the sky when we were traveling to Narhasar. Has there been any change in, like, the amount of wildlife we see or the locations we see it in? Or is it, does it seem to be driven towards Agmar now, like it's running away from something?
Assuming that this is something that Selv is doing, is just kind of trying to observe the natural world around him as you guys are traveling. Things are different. Just a little bit. Everything seems quieter. And it's hard because you guys are at a very high altitude. But Rixia also has a lot of very, very large things. And usually you could see at least something, a big flock of something, a herd stampeding. You guys are actually going over a lot of grasslands in addition to some of the forests. Since you are paying attention, things are a little more subdued in the natural world at the moment. But the one thing you do see up in the sky after your days of travel is a maybe now friendly shape. The shape of a very large bird flapping its way over towards you. Within a little while, or with a little spy of a spyglass, you see that it is indeed one of the raven mounts that have been stationed at Agmar.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, it's Old Bill! Roll
initiative! He's come for his revenge. This is not a raven mount that you guys recognize, in fact. But you see them kind of give a little bit of a wingtip signal of acknowledgement, and they actually kind of pull up alongside you from a responsible distance, but kind of like a, you know, a fellow F-16 coming in, escorting you home.
I was really wondering, like, if there was going to be some sort of docking protocol for the Sky Stalker to get into Agmar, because they had the whole shield and everything. And it's like, how are we going to communicate? Is, like, sending for different, like, keywords and stuff? I'm glad you've solved it with Raven Mounts, and I don't have to worry about it.
Raven Mounts. Easy.
Permission to buzz the tower.
Yeah. After a little bit more travel, you guys can see the Red City once more. And I don't know. It's interesting seeing Agmar again. Of course, you're home for many months now. And something that you now have seen up in the air a couple of times. But just having come from Narhasar, there's a little extra, not familiarity, but alienness to it. You're reminded a bit, not of home, not of walls that will be guarding your naps, hopefully in a few hours, but you're reminded a little bit of the grim architecture of the Pentarchy. Val.
Yes.
You've been in study for several days. You've learned.
There's a fresh notebook cracked for the study of this.
I would imagine. Because again, this is the first new object of focus that has been discovered in decades.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else almost certainly would have just been lost to time, but still known, where it's almost has passed into legend or something. But this is something no one knows anything about and is a kind of novel study experience for today's illustrious Atheum scholar. You have attuned to this item. You've learned that this is in fact a +3 implement. Again, both, I would say it is a +3 arcane focus or religious whatever focus you clerics or whatever have, or warlocks, I don't even know. Probably maybe a +1 spear. It's less of a spear.
Yeah.
But as you've kind of attuned to it, it's still a work in progress because you haven't really been able to use it. And that's, as you know, that you guys have experienced with the Ring of the Bear and other and just kind of historical things. You kind of have to use it and to be a little bit more connected with it. So the only other thing of real note, mechanically speaking, that you have discovered is that anyone who is attuned to the Groma automatically succeeds on all concentration checks when you are concentrating on a conjuration spell.
Oh.
You also get the impression that this is an item that can be attuned to by many people.
Hmm.
And as you travel towards the city, you see out of the corner of your eye the weights on it, the plumb lines. The weights themselves start to glow with a faint red light. And all of the parts of it, again, it's kind of an axis situation, start to slowly revolve on each other.
Hmm.
Picture a very slow-moving, like, child crib diorama amount of movement.
Okay.
Where it's just slowly rotating. The two axes are crossing. Axi? Whatever. And just noticeably reacting to being close to the Red City.
Interesting.
And Val, as you, you know, squint, interesting. An explosion rocks the bow of the ship. Huge flash of light.
Okay, what's happening?
Is it fireworks?
Are we under attack? Livingstone, what's the status?
There's panic on the deck. Livingstone is shouting out. There's a pause for a moment. And then out in front of you, you see a large explosion of fiery light and color. As it seems like maybe someone looking to welcome you home is very poor aim with fireworks.
Where is that dress? Where is he?
For the remainder of your descent,
Kaskrin has like a blanket trying to put out fire on the side of the ship. God damn it, Etrus.
For the remainder, there are appropriately spaced but very loud window-shaking fireworks to the point where you might have a little bit of tinnitus for a little bit.
I'm imagining, too, the Seeker was the one piloting us on our way back instead of Livingstone, because, like, the Seeker, you know, they've had a lot of practice at this point. We're just going in a straight line back to Agamor, so, and suddenly, like, they have to, you know, they pull on the wheel.
Yeah. Like,
it's immediate tactical evasive maneuvers. Absolutely. Yeah. People are shifting around. And one of the last things that you see before kind of touching down.
Before the ship explodes.
Yeah. One of the last things you see.
Up on the wall is a furiously waving Etrus Pensempre Potionsmith of the Golden Tree with a gangly, awkward lizard folk teen, Anthony, his assistant, as you may recall. A party of people come out to meet you. It's not quite the same turnout as the amount of people who were there as you left, but they are making up for it with enthusiasm, and enthusiasm for the fact that you guys aren't dead. Good job, everyone. Berga is there, kind of wheeling out in front of everyone. Mira Carter, you see, is also just is wearing her, what you know to be, Val, her research vest, which is just a lot of pockets for scrolls, baubles, pencils, etc.
It's a more intense, like, fisherman's vest.
That's exactly what it is. And it does not fit her, but it fits all of her stuff very well. So it's kind of like down to the knee level thing. Pockets everywhere.
I was just going to say, it's impressive because she is a Goliath.
Yeah.
She's, like, very,
she's a Goliath, exactly. And it is big on her because it needs to fit so many scrolls.
Precisely.
Does Mira Carter have, like, cargo pants and things, too?
It's a cargo vest.
Cargo vest?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. It's like a cargo tunic.
There,
like,
nothing, very few things, I'd imagine, in the Carter family are not cargoed. At least there is a section of every dresser that's like, and here's the cargo shirt pile. Here's the cargo sock pile. Yeah. And then we don't always wear them, but they're always available.
There is an uncle who is dedicated to pocket dimension wear.
I really want this to be like a fashionable thing within the illustrious Atheum. Like Mira Carter is a trendsetter, and people who work underneath her are like, cargo.
They're Carter pockets.
It's like I'm imagining like the ball gown, but every ball gown has a giant bow, and the bow is just like several pockets. Like you just like put stuff in the pockets. Like
Now imagining that there are like different sects of the illustrious Atheum that are formed based on pocket system in clothing.
Absolutely. They
who's
have
his
thoughts.
Cargo? Who's, you know?
They
like,
have opinions.
Yeah.
This is what we're talking about as we're making our way down.
I'm trying to avoid the horror and sadness that awaits a city prepping for war, Jonathan.
I had a
Let me have this.
Serious thing. I want like a scene that I wanted to do, and it's all gone. Yeah. It doesn't matter anymore.
You see Vina Calvetta there. You see the shield there, the commander of the bones. You see, in fact, you checkers may be delighted to see, you see several members of the Frog Squad.
I wave so hard back at them.
Specifically, you see James and Dag out there, kind of with everyone else.
Do we see James?
Does he?
Are there? Well, there's not a lot of squares around.
Yeah. I don't know. Agmar is looking like a pretty square city.
I guess what I'll say is, James, I think, despite all of his base instincts, in this one moment of his life, desperately wants to be seen.
Okay.
And whether that's successful, I leave that to the listener and to you all. Checkers, you see James.
I feel
everyone
James
else,
in my heart.
That's
yes.
right. You know somewhere deep down that he is there. And again, there are a handful of other people, but also there are certainly a number of people that are not. You don't see any other members of the Red Guard, of the Bones. You don't see people from the library. You don't see, you know, the bartenders that came and bid you adieu, the shopkeepers, anyone else. So it is, you know, the people you really want to see, of course, led most of all by galloping beautiful princess Hodi.
Yeah.
But not flying.
Not stubbing. Only
skittering.
Stubbing. With a chicken perched on her back. And you are greeted warmly and you're brought. You're kind of brought into the city. They obviously have heard a lot about how you've spent the last several days thanks to a copious number of sendings, thanks to a power mother-daughter combo. Interestingly, one of the new attendees who was kind of lingering to the outskirts or maybe obscuring themselves in a way to make their presence not obvious is a certain little dryad child. The field that resides here, which again was the little dryad that you guys planted sort of nearby. And as you're being ushered into the city, this little dryad child also kind of comes up and is like, oh, Hedge family, hello!
Hello!
It's so good to see you all!
Kaskrin's like, is like pleasantly surprised to see this dryad. And, like, extends a hand to kind of... How big are they, actually?
They are bigger than when you last saw them, but are probably still the dimensions of, like, an 8-year-old. And a kind of scrawny 8-year-old at that. So pretty small, but, you know, a little bit more robust than they once were.
Okay. I'm imagining Kaskrin's is, like, going up and, like, putting their hand on their head.
Totally.
And, like, kind of ruffling their grassy hair.
Ah! Doesn't care for it. But also, like, turns herself into vines a little bit and kind of wraps herself around your arm.
Yeah.
And then now you have an 8-year-old just hanging fully formed on your arm.
That seems about
He's
right.
He's got, like, his arm out and she's, like, dangling there or something.
And it's like, it's so good to see you. I heard, you know, just a little bit. I've been kind of hanging around the city, and I heard a little bit. It sounded like really, like, scary and weird and, like, other hedge uncle! And then goes over, goes over to Selv, and similarly kind of, like, snakes her body up, up your body.
Yeah. Actually, Selv will lift up so that if she wants, she could actually sit on his shoulder, because he's tall, and that's what 8-year-olds want the height.
Yes, absolutely. And is up top your shoulders and just kind of like has her hands on your mane and in your horns. And it's a weird, unsettling feeling because they're not fully formed fingers. They're like kind of more vine tendrily kind of deals. But, you know, it's nice also. As this party kind of goes towards the city, there's chatter, there's hugs, there is happy braying of baby donkeys. Self. The world around you seems to fade just a little bit, or maybe it's you that fades a little bit from the world, just for a few moments, and your hedge niece kind of leans in and says,
"Just so you know, the tree man said he wanted to talk to you as soon as possible, but only you."
Oh, well, thank you.
Actually, tree guy. He wanted me to say that.
I understand.
Okay. And she slithers down and like, just like stops right at the entry of the city. And then just kind of like, all right, I'll be out here. See you guys later. Bye. So Self, you've been contacted by, I couldn't guess who that she was talking about, but someone, hopefully you know.
Someone who goes by a couple of initials.
I'm sure has an interesting job, probably.
Could be. In that case, I will kind of like slow down and stop and give a slight bow to the rest of the Golden Tree Guild and say,
I'm going to stretch my legs a little bit. The several days on the airship has left me wanting to move in a straight line and not have to turn around and go back the other direction. So I'll be back shortly.
Burger calls out, hurry back. We have a lot of very delicious food that will not last very long, I'm sure.
I'll make it as quickly as possible.
Val casts Mind Link and is like, what's up? Val doesn't need a vibe check, Sel. She knows he had plenty of calisthenics on board the Skystalker.
He wanted to take a nap.
What's the range on Mind Link?
It's like 30 feet.
30 feet. Away?
No. You can't cast me. I have 50-foot movement speed.
Val's voice slowly echoes.
Well, Val, I just got contacted by...
No. Selv will respond back and just say,
our tree inspector would like to speak to me. I don't know what about.
All right.
I'll buy it for now.
I'll save you a plate.
Thank you.
And as the rest of the party is kind of getting off of the Skystalker and making their way towards either the guild hall or towards some secret rendezvous.
Ooh.
Checkers is stepping down off of the gangway, and he turns around and he sees Captain Livingstone and the rest of the crew. And I think we may have had some kind of agreement with Vina Calvetta when we originally brought the pirates in of like, oh, they have to stay on the ship or they have to be, you know, within earshot of the bones at any point in time. But he looks back at them as he's walking down and just sees them stop at the entrance and just turns around and goes, what are you guys waiting for? Come on, there's food at the guild hall. Come on, we're going to go eat. Just inviting them to come down with us.
The 8 mortals and 1 large snake look at each other, and the captain gives a very small nod to you and says,
you heard him. Through the city. Get your grub. And there's like a little like, hey.
We've been eating nothing but blocks for like 4 weeks now.
Yes. 3 cheers for Admiral Captain Checkers. Hey. So the main group of guilders enter the guild hall, and there is no business to be had, at least for the little while. There is a full spread of full foods.
Actual food.
No blobs here other than pleasurable blobs, say potatoes and that sort of thing. It is essentially a welcome home feast. It is cramped as hell in the guild hall because you can host a number of people, but there's like still like 30 people here. And some of them are members of the Bones, and that feels weird. But it is immediately kind of a party atmosphere. And it is immediately you are thrown into the warmth of life in the city, even just for a moment, and are surrounded by people excited to see you.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hi, it's me, Sophie. Do you want more Reckless Attack? Then join our Discord and chat with us in our community. The link for the Discord is in the show notes, or head on over to our website, recklessattack.com. We also have a Patreon. You can listen to our new show, Reckless Snack, and other content if you become a patron. We really appreciate your support, and thank you for listening to the episode.
Selvastrilin.
Yes.
You find your way to a nearby haunting, stomping ground, maybe, of a certain PI tree guy. As soon as you pause, wait around for a little bit, you see a light flash a couple times at you.
All right, I'll take a quick look around and then do what you're not supposed to do and follow the light.
Doesn't take long for you to soon see the outline of Alarith, PI, Tree Guy. As a reminder, imagine just Treebeard from Lord of the Rings, but smaller, wearing a trench coat. He puts away whatever he was using to signal you into one of his trench coat pockets. Says, Astralin, thanks for meeting me. I apologize for cutting short your homecoming.
That's quite a right. It seemed like, well, must have been important.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure I got a hold of you before anyone else did. I just wanted to make sure that you and your guild and, well, only you and your guild for now heard something before you heard from anyone else. Two things, really. First, sometimes I listen for things. Sometimes I hear things. Something I've been hearing is that a certain former head honcho around here has maybe woken up from a nap recently.
That's basically all he gets out of himself at the moment.
And with that, I've also heard that some people, some mortals around the city are starting to have some strange dreams, which, I mean, it's a weird world. It's a stressful time. Ultra giants back, demons in the sky and on the ground. You can have some weird dreams. But what was interesting, seems a common theme in these dreams. Obelisks.
Selv will kind of turn and look to the vacant area where the obelisk used to be that was brought out for the festival. That seems like many, many years ago at this point. That he knows is being researched currently in some deep dark hole, and just kind of nods at the at Alarith and says,
any other common themes?
Hard to say. I got a lot of jobs, but interpreting dreams ain't one of them that people come to me for. But I do have other news, and he kind of chews a bit of, I don't know, leaf in his mouth, whatever. This is the one I really want you to keep close to that scaly chest of yours.
Understood.
I've kept it quiet myself, but I've been looking into things for a long while now. Thinking back that time with all the Mothmen here in the city. And I've been pulling on threads one after the other. And I think I'm ready to say, somewhere in this city, maybe somewhere at the top of this city, the first ones and the shepherd have an ally somewhere. I don't know if it's someone with connections, resources, or maybe it's someone with no connections. Someone with magic, or at least access to it. And I got a few other leads here and there, but just wanted to tell someone, be careful who you trust and with what. Tell only who you need to about your comings and goings, your plans, the whys, the hows, and maybe make that list, the need to knows, even smaller than you'd think.
You be careful as well, and if there's anything you need in any of this investigation, let us know. Let me know. I'll see what I can do.
If I do my job right, you won't see me at all. And then he leans further back into the tree that he's leaning on and disappears into it.
Need to learn how to do that.
Alarith and Captain Livingstone can't meet because it's just too cool.
It's too cool.
Yeah.
It's too much.
So with that, Selv will kind of give a slight bow towards the tree as if Alarith was still there, and then turn around and head back towards the guild hall, and just kind of going over in his head what he just heard, trying to piece that together with what happened in Narhasser and what happened with Checkers the Chosen and the bringing back to the Mothman, and just trying to get some idea of if there's anything that jumps out as a person that would have been connected to all of those things. And unfortunately, right now, there are a lot of people that are connected to all of those things.
Much to ponder. Eventually, you guys see Selv Astralin has returned to the guild hall. He hasn't gone particularly long, but he's greeted with a big cheer, assuming he's not trying to stealth his way up to his room past the whole party.
I was actually thinking about it.
Maybe
what
you
do you
don't
mean?
Then.
I've been here the whole time.
Yeah, right? And I think tonight is just about welcoming you guys back to the city. You guys have been feasting for a little bit. Kind of the initial party has died down just a little bit. Everyone has trays of food, all that good stuff. And someone, actually, unbelievably, new arrives. On it, in addition to kind of the familiar faces who are all, you're kind of excitedly talking to you. Kind of just appearing is a crouched, older figure. That of Filigan Pines. Of Deepwood. I will say, who wants to be cornered by Filigran Pines?
Val.
It's Kaskrin Brightman.
Great.
You find yourself next to this old man, Kaskrin, and he has a plate of food.
Yeah.
It is full.
Kaskrin is, he's gone up for thirds, and he was a little over ambitious on this pass because
Classic.
He's got two mugs of ale in one hand, and he's holding like 2 to 3 plates filled with different, like, he's got his
you know, third main course and then a dessert and then like a little after, you know, a little evening wine all tucked in his arms. And he can't really maneuver around that much. And he finds himself just kind of scooting out to the edge of this table, trying to find another place to sit when Filigreen Pines approaches him. And he's like trying to go to the left, trying to go to the right. And there's just not enough space with all these plates.
Master Brightmane, it's so good to see you and your guilders back in the Red City once more.
Oh, yeah, you too, Filigreen. There's not a lot of room here.
He puts his plate down and sits down right next to you in a way that optimally blocks you. consciously or unconsciously, it's impossible to know.
And he says, oh, it sounds like you've had quite the adventure seeing this, the old city of Narhasar and surviving the things that you've survived. I hear you've heard from a certain acquaintance of ours as well.
Kaskrin, like, he's still trying to get around him, but there's, like, the second he sets the plates down, he knows, like, Kaskrin knows there's no escape. And he, like, looks around to see who else is watching them, and then we'll say to Filigreen, well, you did hear right. The Shepherd contacted us while we were coming back from the Deadlands. And they want to meet. But we want to make sure that we're meeting on our terms.
You see, he is now just picking the skin off of some fried chicken and just eating it, just one tiny bite at a time, just little pinch into his mouth over and over.
I really want him to finish what's on his plate and then start picking at Kaskrin.
And Kaskrin will like kind of like talk. He's like talking for a while and like regaling some more, a little bit more details of like, we got the stone, nothing like crazy sensitive, but enough for Filigreen to like have finished a piece of chicken.
Oh, it'll take a while. So you'll have time for embellishment.
And Filigreen says, oh, that's very interesting. I think you would agree. Are you, the four of you, planning on rendezvousing?
And Kaskrin, like, looks at one of the Tims that's walking by, and he sees Filigreen and me having, like, a pleasant conversation, but I'm just mouthing towards the Tim, save me! And he just walks away. Kaskrin says to Filigreen, yes, I think we will go see the Shepherd, if nothing else than to tie one thread up. The Shepherd has one of our friends. They have a frog that is very precious to my friend Checkers. In addition, they know things. Mm. And perhaps we can reach some sort of agreement, some sort of opportunity. Perhaps we can learn from each other instead of fighting each other.
Filigreen Pines asks, Do you mean that, Master Brightmane?
And he kind of looks a little bemused as he finishes the last crisp of skin on his chicken and eyes yours.
Mm-hmm. And Kaskrin is like almost, he's eyes the ceiling in a way where he thinks he can see someone is listening or watching, and he moves like a hand underneath one of his plates that's like holding something and like slowly reaches it over to Filigreen Pines and like, I don't know, makes some sort of like signal in a way that indicates.
Yeah, I get that. Mm-hmm.
But he's saying one thing and motioning with another thing. It's like, Kaskrin does not know how powerful the Shepherd is and if they can like hear him.
Totally. Filigreen Pines, his wrinkly old face curls up into a big smile, and he looks very directly at you and says,
well, those are truly impressive ideals. What I would say is, in their other form, were with us for some time. I spoke with this person or this facsimile for some time myself personally, and frankly found her delightful and interesting.
You mean Amber Thunderwalker?
Yes. Remarkably, I found them to be a mortal of their word. I and we in this city were treated with great respect for nearly the entirety of their stay, of course, until we were not. I believe they would, if they promised safety, deliver it to you. So long as it suits their needs. So, I think it's an interesting and brave thing you're doing, and I hope it goes well.
Yes, well, I have known the shepherd to be nothing if not driven and resourceful.
And he kind of taps his nose a little bit and with one hand, and the other hand that you're holding gives a squeeze.
Well, I have taken enough time from you on your welcome back party. I just wanted to be sure that I got to speak with you and welcome you all back. I believe that the frog's around here. I should be sure to say hi to him as well.
Yes. Always a pleasure, Filigrin Pines. And Castron, like, tries to scoot around once again.
The skin of your chicken is gone.
No!
And Pines is gone as well. Originally, at the start of this event, spirits were very high. And eventually, the energy kind of starts to run low. And all the conversations become a little quieter, a little more subdued. People start to trickle out. Eventually, I think the only people who are left are Mira Carter, certainly the members, the auxiliary members of the Golden Tree Guild. Realistically, maybe one or two members of the Frog Squad somewhere.
James has gotten in the guild hall. We'll never know if he left.
Yeah. I feel like it's past their curfew, though.
Yeah.
I feel like their parents called them home an hour ago.
That's interesting. You say that. Because Val, your mom, says, I should probably get going. I need to get these kids home. I'll be back in the morning. I know that there's going to be a debrief, that sort of thing. I just need to get them home before it gets too late. It was really great hanging out with you guys, being able to see you. I hope over the last 2 hours I've expressed many times how incredibly proud I am of you guys and how impressed and how much I need to interview you still to kind of learn more exactly about what happened. Anyway, kids, come on. And you see James and Dag, the square dwarf and the little goblin child, you know, just kind of grumble and go behind her. And she gives you, Val, a quick little just kind of peck on the head and kind of like starts hustling towards the door.
Kaskrin is normally like pretty perceptive on social cues and like sees that Mira's trying to get out of the door, but he'll throw out like a, you can always come back after you drop the kids off, you know? It's like, there's plenty of, we'd love to chat with you and hang out.
And she kind of looks at you and freezes a little bit.
Uh-huh.
And she says, thank you for the invitation. I can't. The notes, all the notebooks. And she points to her big fishing vest with a notebook pocket that's filled with, I assume, notebooks that are exactly the correct size to fit into this from Val.
Yeah,
The family, the Carter family standard.
They follow like the A1 paper the rest of the world does and not the US because we have stupid paper sizes here.
It's bulging of notebooks. It's like, I want to make sure that this
Val
gets done.
Puts a hand
don't
on
worry
her
about
mom's
it.
Shoulder.
Like, no, you don't. You can't reach that high.
Her elbow.
You can't.
Mom, what's going on? You've been dodgy all night.
Since you left, the city has instituted a curfew. we didn't want to bring it up tonight. It was, you know, just we wanted to make sure tonight was about welcoming you guys back and leave the kind of the business for tomorrow. So sorry, I wasn't paying attention to the time. I meant to get out of here earlier. You know, we'll just call it a night for now and see you when it's in the morning.
Thanks for dropping the kids off and message me when you get home.
She gives you a little squeeze on the shoulder in a, I guess what I will just say is a mom way loaded with many types of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
And she's like, all right, kids, come on, let's go. Yes, no, we can. Yep, you can play with some of the chemicals that Uncle Etrus gave you on the way home. Just keep it quiet.
I'm imagining Mira just left with the kids. Like, it's starting to be, you know, the curfew is in place. Kaskrin has set down his plates. He's kind of done eating for tonight. And it's like with that same sort of, like, you know, it's not quite like heaviness. It's not quite like sadness, but it's just like that kind of self, that regret of like, Kaskrin, you idiot. Why did you like read the room? God damn it. And he kind of goes over to Captain Livingstone and says, like, hey, we should probably get you guys back to the ship, too.
The captain is like, certainly, yes, of course. Admiral Captain, with your leave.
I'll see you tomorrow.
All right, lads, with me.
And Casper will say, let me take you back. It'll be better if you have
a charming escort.
Yes, 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 of course. And he'll, like, you know, kind of lead Livingstone out. They'll make their way through the much, much quieter streets of the city, past the walls. And Kaskrin will give Captain Livingstone, like, a firm handshake as he leaves and says, thanks for everything, Livingstone. You're all right by me.
If you were another dwarf, I'd say something snide, something cool. But from you, I appreciate it. And hey, it's not such a bad gig. Coming and going from the Red City. Seems like every time you guys leave or come or return, there's always a big party.
Well, one of many reasons we love to call this place home. See you tomorrow, Captain.
Aye.
And Castron will make his way back.
And so, after a night of welcome and a night of joy, followed by a small downer that maybe begs some bigger questions about the state of the city of Agmar, you all go to rest. You know that you will have visitors tomorrow to talk about what's already been done, what's been learned, what remains to be done, but for now, you all, the guilders, eventually fall asleep in your various beds, in your piles of mud, and your burned-out chemical huts, and your hay bales, resting your heads in the Red City that you call home. But somewhere in that same city, maybe that same night, but maybe a different dark and mysterious night, Alarith the PI Tree Guy finally puts down the fantasy equivalent of microfiche in the Agmar Public Library. He stands, the bark in his joints creaking painfully. He trudges back through the stacks, nods to the poor front desk soul still cheerfully manning the overnight shift. He exits the building, looks around, and lights a twig using a cantrip and gives it a moody puff as he turns to leave to wherever he will spend tonight, or at least spend whatever is left of it. But what he doesn't see is the outline of the person watching him from the shadows, waiting. And that is where we'll end this week's episode. See you next time. This little dryad child also kind of comes up and is like, oh, Hedge family, hello!
Hello!
It's so good to see you all!
Who are you? I don't think Checkers has ever met them, honestly.
I thought you guys had then reintroduced everyone.
Okay, never mind.
Am I wrong?
I don't know.
No, I like it. Oh. can you do that 1 second?
Okay.
Yeah. Checkers, be nice. This is the field that resides here. This is the dryad that we brought all the way from Deepwood.
I think canonically, I don't think Checkers has ever met.
I can't remember if you guys had gone through or not.
Because I remember we transplanted the dryad in Agmar, but then Checkers never went to go out and meet them because Checkers was stuck in the, I don't remember. I don't know the timeline. But
was that when you had community service?
Yeah. It was either when I had community service or when I was trapped in the cave.
Yeah.
Yeah. First one.
Yeah, I think it's only Selv and Kaskrin who have ever, like,
yeah,
met
but
this.
We have, I'm sure we've.
Oh, yeah, sure we've told them. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Canonically, Checkers has never been in the room for that conversation, has never heard anyone mention.
Refuses to be not any mentally room. There for that conversation.
Yeah. Like, what are you guys talking about?
Oh, I think whenever somebody's talking about an adventure or something cool that Checkers was not a part of, it becomes the Charlie Brown adult.
Exactly.